Hello, Canada. Today on Tim and Sid, the Mike Babcock talk, believe it or not, continues.
Canada's Davis Cup drought continues.
The Tiger Cats' Grey Cup drought continues.
And the Blue Bombers' Grey Cup drought didn't continue.
Nope. Shorts guy's not wearing shorts anymore in Winnipeg. Tim and Sid, live on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan starts now.
Hashtag Tim and Sid. Of course, I go by the name of the kid. Famous. Wow. This here is the Tim and Sid Show. You are now tuned in, coast to coast, entertaining the masses. Sports entertainment. Yeah. It's about to get started. Sit back, enjoy the show in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
It is Monday, November the 25th. I'm Sid Sixero. Tim McAuliffe is off for the next few weeks, enjoying some much-needed R&R, well-deserved. Sitting in his chair today is, dare I say, one of the real good guys in our business. A hard worker, a talented colleague, and most importantly, dare I say, a friend.
Wow.
Ladies and gentlemen, the non-egotistical Faisal Khamisi. Faisal Khamisi, getting zero applause in the room by other people.
It's okay.
I'm trying.
I know you are, and I appreciate it.
I'm trying to make you look likable. I'm failing very quickly.
I didn't expect all of that. Thank you, though. That's the nicest you've ever been to me.
How much of that did you believe?
None. None of it.
It's all a fib.
None of it.
None of it's real.
None of it. I actually thought you guys might keep the Sixeros marquee up there because you've always called me your long-lost brother.
Never,
and I figured it would be good today.
Never once called you that.
Okay.
Nope.
Nope.
Right. By the way, before we continue, and for those listening on radio driving around the Toronto area, Faisal Khamisi is wearing a gray smoking jacket.
First of all, it's not gray.
Whatever.
Okay.
And a cream-colored turtleneck.
Yep.
So I'm going to be the guy on TV now in Canada who doesn't wear the turtleneck.
Yep.
Because right now it is taking over. You look like a Bond villain.
Thank you. That's a compliment, too, I think.
It is.
Yeah, I think that is a compliment.
Because Bond villains are kind of cool.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah. So how do you feel? Like, do you like this look? Was this done on purpose?
I love this look. And right. I don't know if you remember, and I'll flash back in my head, a week ago, sitting casually in the office, as we do, working for our respective shows. I wasn't hosting your show that day. I was hosting something else and doing my own thing. Tim, who was here at the time, and you saw me in my outfit, black turtleneck, a gray jacket.
We destroyed you.
You destroyed me.
We destroyed
you. You destroyed me. I tweeted about it. And I tweeted and I ended, and I have the tweet up here, guys, if you want to go to it. It says, I'm wearing a turtleneck to work, and Sid Sixero and Tim McAuliffe both hate it. Makes me feel like I made the right decision.
Because you did. You made an awful decision.
But then I didn't make the right decision. If that's what you're saying.
All right, this is already boring me. At cool. Tim and Sid is how you can get a hold of us via Twitter. Our Instagram and Facebook accounts also work. That look is not very good.
What are you saying?
If you would like to stream the show, Sportsnet Now is how you can do that. Just download the Sportsnet app for more information. Coming up, we have a busy show.
All right.
Can't be wasting our time with terrible looks.
All right.
Coming up, we'll discuss Vanier Cup.
Heading to Calgary.
Grey Cup.
Heading to Winnipeg.
Davis Cup.
Nearly heading to Canada.
Raptors Sixers.
Oh, tonight on Sportsnet.
Can you believe we're
still talking Babcock?
We have a lot going on here. We're going to get to the Davis Cup. We're going to get to the Grey Cup. We're going to get to Week 12 in the NFL. We're going to get to a huge Raptors Sixers game live on Sportsnet tonight. First game between the two since May 12th of this year. Kawhi Leonard. Boom, 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 boom.
It feels like yesterday. It really does feel like yesterday.
So we'll talk about the overrated Sixers here momentarily as they're going to take on the Raptors tonight. Considering we have all this going on, considering there's a lot of hockey things to talk about, the Flames finally got a win over the weekend they can be proud of, and the Habs right now have found themselves in a bit of a hole here.
Oh, my gosh.
How on earth we are still bringing this back to Mike Babcock is not something I fully understand. But we are here now.
Yeah.
Some of you know the story. For those of you watching and listening who do not, Faisal, allow me just to bring everyone up to speed on what the hell is going on here. So, breaking news, Mike Babcock got fired last week by the Leafs. Sheldon Keefe took over. He's 2-0. Over the weekend, Terry Koshan of the Toronto Sun, in one of his articles, put in a little nugget. A story that he had heard through his sources about Mike Babcock and Mitch Marner from Marner's rookie season in 2016 and 17. The story goes like this and has since been confirmed by all parties involved. Terry wrote the following. Babcock was alleged to have asked one of the Leaf rookies to list the players on the team from hardest working to those who, in the eyes of the rookie, Mitch Marner, didn't have a strong work ethic. The rookie did so, not wanting to upset his coach, but was taken aback when Babcock told the players who had been listed at the bottom of the list. So again, that was in the middle of one of Terry's columns over the weekend in the Toronto Sun. And today, Marner was asked about this, and he did speak on this. And we have the quote here. This is from Mitch Marner this morning, who, by the way, is still about 2 weeks away from coming back from the sprained ankle.
Skating on the ice, that should be what we're talking
about. Normally, guys don't really talk to the media who have been injured like this, but we're here now. Said Marner today, quote, "I was lucky enough that the guys that were there with me, none of them took it to heart, and they knew it wasn't up to me to make the list. But it's so long ago now, it was huge for a first-year guy. When I heard about what Babcock did, I didn't really know what to think, but I was lucky enough to have the first-year group with me, and our team was very tight and a very well-knit group. That was a lucky situation, but it's over now. It's out of my head." So Mitch Marner, again, said that today to the media earlier today. And Mike Babcock, who was obviously texted about this by numerous people, including our own Elliot Friedman here at Sportsnet, acknowledged that it took place. It was a poor choice of judgment. And he did apologize to Mitch. Faisal, first thing to you. Look, I think we can all agree here that asking a rookie to give you a list of hardworking guys and then telling the team is probably a D-bag move.
It is. You know, it's a weird thing because usually on Twitter there's mixed opinions about every single thing in the entire world. There isn't here. Everyone can agree that this was a ridiculous coaching tactic, whatever you want to call it. It was a D-bag move. You said it. It was exactly that. So there's a consensus amongst that it's there. There's also some other things leaking out, like why now? Like why is this stuff all coming out now?
Here's what I don't like about this. Mm-hmm. Listen, it is commonplace in professional sports. Guy gets fired. Some people in the organization don't like dude who's fired. And then stories come out. This is as transparent as it gets. This is one of the oldest tricks in the book, especially in the last several years, right? But my concern, if I'm a guy in that Leafs room, because we're all human, we all have stuff. Are you telling me if Mike Babcock feels he's going to start to lose job interviews because of something like this? Because if I'm a player on another team and I hear Mike Babcock might be my new coach, I remember this.
Yeah, of course.
I have questions. I have concerns. I have a conversation with my GM, especially if I'm a significant player, if I'm a leader, if I'm a guy who's won a cup, let's say. I have a long conversation about Mike Babcock joining my organization. So stories like this, and let's assume maybe they're not done, because this I'm stunned this came out. If they start costing Mike some job interviews, because we all agree Mike Babcock wants to coach again in this league, if he feels like he's losing opportunities, do you think Babcock has stories?
He probably has stories, too.
Man, let me tell you something.
But it won't bode well on him to release those stories because that looks bad.
He'll be smart enough where it's not traced back. My point is this. The guys in that Leaf room and those in the organization, this is not a good thing. I understand Mike Commodore is treating Mike Babcock like a piñata. And Mark Frazier, a former Leafs defenseman, defended Commodore over the weekend. And Ryan Whitney of Spit and Chicklets, we're going to talk to him next hour. He knows Mike pretty well. We're going to get his take on this. But look, I'm not going to assume that's a perfect room in Toronto.
No, but you can't assume any room is perfect.
That's the point.
Yeah.
The point is, whoever's throwing this stuff out there, because this is a bizarre story to put out there and will hurt Mike Babcock potentially getting another job. I'm not willing to say it's going to prevent him, but it may hurt him. If Mike picks up the vibe that hurts him, Mike might have some stories too. Just be very careful going down this road, man. I don't know if 23 angels exist in that Leaf room. I'm not there enough. But all I know is if you're going to start costing a guy opportunities, he may fight back a little bit. And I know the hockey community is pretty stand up, and no one wants to throw people under buses that badly. But listen, if Mike feels like he has to defend himself, he might do that. Because right now, this is a one-way street in terms of the ripping. And again, no one likes that story with Marner. It's quite frankly weird.
It was so weird.
There's nothing
it's
about
just
it.
Weird, right?
There's nothing about it that makes sense. Now, keep in mind, that's the same guy that turned into a 2-time leading scorer for you.
Yep. Yeah.
So the facts would suggest maybe it didn't destroy the kid.
Not at all.
He's now making $10.8 million.
Yeah.
And again, I don't know who's Terry Koshan's source is. I like Terry a lot, so I'm not going to speculate. But if I'm someone in that Leaf room, you got to worry about this a little bit. You got to tread a little more lightly, because this may have other repercussions that guys aren't thinking about. Whoever is leaking this needs to be careful, because I'm sure Mike Babcock, if he wanted to, has some stories of his own, and some of them might not be good.
How ready were you to talk about the Leafs after two games under Sheldon Keefe instead of something like this? I imagine all the players would have been too. The people who I think are the most annoyed at this are the people that sit upstairs in the offices instead. You know, right. the executives. I don't think this looks good on anybody, right? And there are people that are trying to assume that because of what happened with Marner in his rookie season, that is why he's trying to milk every penny out, especially if he's playing for a boss he doesn't like. I spoke to Elliot Friedman a little earlier today about this. It's up on all the socials on Sportsnet. He said that was purely about money. This didn't have any effect on him, too. And he agreed, too, that he finds it interesting that all of this stuff
is coming out now. You got a problem with Babcock, just do it. Just at least have the balls to do it when he's around, right? Because right now, Sheldon Keefe's there. They're 2-0. Everyone's Alex Kerfoot got a 2-game suspension today.
Yeah.
No one on Twitter is talking about that in Leaf Nation. So all I'm saying is this could go two ways. And wherever the leak is coming from on this, whatever the source is, I would just caution everyone involved here. Because if Mike feels like he needs to fight for himself going forward, if this is going to cost him opportunities, He may drop a story of his own, and this could be ugly all the way around. So, I didn't think we'd be in here on a Monday.
Talking about this. Here we are.
This, a bit of a soap opera is continuing here, and I'm a little shocked that it is continuing. All right. Anything else on this before we move on? I just felt I wanted to get this in before we get to the Grey Cup and the Davis Cup.
Shouldn't ask you to rank the camera people, right? Based on who you like.
We're gonna take a break.
Okay. Cool.
We're gonna take a break. Coming up, Grey Cup is done. Winnipeg having a party. Ty Cats, Hamilton, I feel for you. I feel for you. Davis Cup was super entertaining.
Yeah.
Canada deserved probably better. It is what it is. Week 12 in the NFL. Raptors, Sixers tonight. Busy show. Tim, Sid, and Faisal.
Sports Things.
Welcome back to Tim, Sid, and Faisal here on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. A Grey Cup and Davis Cup talk coming up in seconds. But first, to the Twitter lines, at Tim and Sid, some last-minute reactions from you guys about the Babcock and Marner thing before we move on. Faisal, go ahead.
Yeah, so none of these tweets are pertaining to the Babcock and Marner situation.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Yeah, so here we go. Let's go.
I got my information wrong.
It looks like Drake, Faisal, looks like Drake in the Hotline Bling video.
Oh, they're
with
all about Faisal's turtleneck.
Yep.
Got it.
Yep.
I thought it was going to be about Babcock, Marner. My mistake.
Faisal out here looking like budget Rob Gronkowski from last night. A lot of spelling issues there, my guy. It's okay. That's mine. We'll move on. Faisal looks like he should be in a J.P. Weiser commercial.
Okay, that I'll take.
Okay.
That I remotely understand.
Sounds good. I think the turtleneck would impress Nate Burleson this week. I agree. Make sure you ask him up.
Let me get this straight. Hold on.
Are
you comparing your look
with
Nate Burleson?
No.
I will play the clip back for him.
All I'm saying is Nate Burleson is a very stylish gentleman. A man that dresses to impress everywhere he goes. And we've had that. When Donovan and I hosted the show and he's been on, we have talked to him about the fashion. He's wearing suit with shorts, all right?
Right.
He would be impressed by this look, I think. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, I'm so going to tattle on you. Time for the lead megaphone.
Is it a tattle?
Brought to you by Rogers Ignite TV. Now, you are in command. You've been voting all day long at sportsnet.ca/vote. Option one, Bombers win the Grey Cup. Option two, interesting NFL Sunday. Interesting week 12 total. Option three, Davis Cup. And is that 55%?
Yeah.
55%. I thought it would be more than that. Bombers winning the Grey Cup is your runaway leader. Shout out to Canada at the Davis Cup busting their ass. We'll get to that in a second. But let's begin, shall we, with the CFL. Blue Bombers took home the 107th Grey Cup last night after a 33-12 victory over Hamilton at McMahon. The win marked Winnipeg's first Grey Cup win since 1990. Led by Andrew Harris, who finished with 169 total yards and two touchdowns, en route to becoming the first ever player to win MVP and Most Valuable Canadian in the same Grey Cup. Faisal, after a roller coaster season, What do you make of Andrew Harris's quote-unquote mic drop in the biggest game of his season, arguably, considering the context of this year, his entire career?
Oh, man, he wanted to shut people up, didn't he? Like, absolutely. He wanted to shut people up. Suspended 2 games, still trying to prove that what was taken and caused him to be banned was purely luck and purely accidental. Left off every awards list, left off every all-star consideration, despite leading the league in rushing by like 300 yards. 2 TDs in the first half. Winnipeg in control the whole way, thanks to him on offense. You heard him post-game. And no matter what interview he was in, he wanted to remind people, that they were hating, and he was not here for it. And so this was about him, I think, and he carried Winnipeg to this victory, and that whole city can celebrate because of him.
You mentioned the post game. Guys, if we can cue up the post game of Harris, let me know when we got it. Actually, we got it now. This is because that is the story of this entire evening and maybe the season for Winnipeg. Here's Andrew Harris after the game, quote-unquote, letting them know.
These 2 trophies and that one behind, that's for all the haters that put me down, Kiko and I down. All right? So stick both these trophies. You know us.
Easy.
Yeah.
Easy.
This is a kid's show. Yeah.
But I wouldn't have been mad at Andrew Harris if he decided to go down that road.
Yeah.
I mean, he came in with a purpose yesterday. He came in. Guys, the pregame stuff. Let me know when we got that.
It was from the beginning. He was ready.
Again, the three-letter has a camera, obviously, because they own the whole thing, basically, in the dressing room. What you're about to hear is Andrew Harris get his team fired up in a way that was very effective. It got to the point where it made me want to exercise and do something with my life.
You got my back! You got my back!
Andrew Harris literally carrying the flag for his hometown Winnipeg Blue Bombers.
They were never losing that game.
They
were. Oh, my gosh.
Like,
oh,
they
my
weren't.
Gosh.
And it wasn't just the Dane Evans first throw of the night being intercepted.
Sure.
And it wasn't just him getting dinged up a little bit on the second series of the game, which McAuliffe texted me about, which I didn't notice initially. Nobody really made much of it, but he fumbled in his next snap, and he didn't look the same after that. But this was an evening where they were not going to be denied. And when you go back to August and Andrew Harris coming up with a positive test, and you saw his reaction to that, and look, and I'll be frank, because I on air, my take for Andrew Harris and anyone else, Chris Colabella, you name it, I don't know who I trust anymore.
Right.
So I'm watching that last night, and I'm saying to myself, this is a young man in Andrew Harris who, under no circumstances, was going to let that positive test define 2019. Everything you saw from that point on was an effort to shut down the critics, to prove something to himself, and almost more importantly, to prove something to his teammates that he felt he let down. And I think you saw that narrative was alive and well throughout the entire evening and arguably going back to when he came back in the late summer. It was I felt good for the young man. And I couldn't imagine how difficult that was. Again, I'm not going to get into the nuance of whether or not I believe him or don't believe him. I made my opinion clear on that for most people that test positive. But to come back and earn back the trust is an incredible moment for
him. He's dragging people up and down the field with him as he's running. Like, it was insane to watch. It was insane to watch. He definitively looked like the best player on the field. And that was still with the Winnipeg defense that caused 4 turnovers. Like, they played outstanding as well, and they deserve a lot of credit. 3 turnovers in the first quarter alone, right? And
three turnovers, first 4 possessions.
That's what I'm saying. It didn't define the game there because, you know, they didn't really score a lot in that first quarter, but you know, when he decided it was time to put this game away, they put this game away. And for a Canadian running back to do that and to win those 2 awards after the season that he had, after the narratives that were written about him, again, he heard all of them. He knew all of them. Yeah. And Donovan Bennett tweeted, like, Canadian running backs, they don't do this, right? This is not things that they do historically, right? And so it was,
and I mean, any Canadian running back out there watching that,
that's what I'm saying.
Anywhere across the country, high school, youth sports, you name it. I mean, it can happen here.
Yeah.
You know, and I think a lot of Canadian football fans who've been pounding the drum on more Canadian talent at those types of positions, that made them smile.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying it's going to open the door for quarterbacks, which hopefully it will at one point.
It's starting. This is something.
But that, in terms of a Canadiana football moment, in terms of young kids absorbing what's going on. That was massive. That was absolutely massive last night. And when you think of the city of Winnipeg, like, let's go back in their sporting history here, right? Like, 1990 is the last time they win a Grey Cup. A hockey team that they absolutely adore, it leaves, and you got to wait.
Yep.
And you wait, and you wait, and you wait. The Jets come back, as Gary Bettman, with a frown on his face, says, the place better be sold out, or else. So you're playing scared from the jump, and then the Jets get good, and they finally get in the playoffs, and then first couple times back in the playoffs, sweeps. Get their ass handed to them. So once again, hope, and it's just killed. Then you win a round. Then you go to the second. Then you see Vegas in a conference final. Then you're we got an expansion team in a conference final. This is going to happen for Winnipeg.
You called it.
Nope. Now, a lot of teams were thinking the same thing that postseason.
Of course.
But my point is,
that's exactly my point.
The Winnipeg sports fan has seen some stuff, right?
Yeah.
And to finally have that situation come up last night where they get the job done, where they win, and the visuals of them bringing the Grey Cup. Did the Grey Cup just break there momentarily or snap off? It looked like it did. We can run the video back, guys. I think we have breaking news. The Grey Cup may have just snapped in half.
Let's see.
We're going to run the... And it might...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. The Grey Cup, upon returning to Winnipeg momentarily, broke but was saved. Some crazy glue will fix that up, guys. I think it's still in two pieces.
They're holding in the right exact right spot, eh? Good PR.
I think the football in the Grey Cup probably didn't help from a weight distribution standpoint, but whatever. I'm sure the Winnipeg fans who are seeing this really don't matter.
They don't care. Right.
It doesn't matter. So for the people of Winnipeg, the fans specifically, congratulations.
Yeah.
And you know, I feel your pain down through the years for a wide variety of issues. The losing of the hockey team hurts the most. To see it, you had to wait to see it come back. They are a resilient bunch in that market, and congratulations on getting this. One fan specifically last night was the poster boy, you can say, of that resilience, or the poster man of resilience.
Panster boy?
He was known as Shorts Guy. And in 1989, he was watching a Grey Cup, and he told a buddy, I will wear shorts for the rest of my life until Winnipeg wins a Grey Cup. And that wait was a long time. His name is Chris Matthews. He has worn shorts, reportedly. I can't believe I read this story today. He has worn shorts every day of his life.
He doesn't know how to put on the pants.
Since 1989. He was so disillusioned with the pants situation, he didn't know how to put them on last night. Somehow he got on the field. How the hell does he get on the field, by the way?
They flew him in.
With all due respect to Shorts Guy, I don't know if you should be on the field for that.
Imagine you're sitting next to him on that flight in shorts and legs and this.
But when I say he's worn shorts, FaZe.
No, I know.
He has shoveled snow
in shorts.
He has gone to, like, the convenience store in shorts. The only thing he hasn't done in shorts, reportedly, is go to a funeral in shorts.
Yep.
Which I think is kind of BS.
Got to do it. Got to commit.
If you're going to be shorts guy.
Nate Burleson wore shorts with suits. That's what I'm saying.
If you're going to be shorts guy, you go all in. You don't half-ass it.
What's your opinion? Nice. What's your opinion on shorts?
I don't wear shorts.
I generally hate wearing shorts.
And I got great legs.
And that's what I'm saying. I'm like surprised by that, given legs. Your leg situation.
My calves are delicious. They're surprisingly good for someone who works out, like, very little. But congratulations to Shorts Guy, who's now wearing pants. If how did Shorts Guy stay married is what I want to know.
Wifey was a big star yesterday, too. Like, she was pretty happy.
Well, they got a lot of airtime out of this.
Yeah.
Like, way too much airtime. Winnipeg just won a Grey Cup. Shorts Guy is everywhere.
He's
Shorts
their ambassador.
Guy's trending. Shorts
As somebody on- said in our meeting today, he's their Drake.
He is their Drake?
He's their Drizzy. He's their Drizzy.
But not wearing pants in Winnipeg is like, you could die.
Yes. That is not healthy, right? Like, right. it's not healthy.
But anywhere in Canada, you need pants at some point. You get 30 centimeters on the ground and go out there in shorts like it's nothing. What's wrong with you?
Would anybody have been mad if he just said, you know what, I'm going to change my mind and wear pants now? I feel like he did that. A lot of pride had to go into doing this, and I don't really get why. Like, I want to know a little bit more, but not at the same time. Like, does he have friends? Do they invite him out? Like, do they want to be seen around him? Because I imagine everywhere he goes, in the middle of winter with shorts, he's being asked by everybody, hey, crazy guy, why are you wearing shorts?
But, like, you can't go to the club.
Yeah.
Like, if you're,
okay,
if
so,
you're buddies with
right,
a guy.
Man, so that's a good point.
Like, if you want to go to Fluid, you can't go. That's a reference from my time. Yes. Like, you can't. It's like, hey, Faisal, you want to go to the club? It's like, hey, can I bring my shorts?
It's Fluid.
You can't do. You should know what Fluid. You can't have that guy as a friend. You can't go out socially.
That's what I mean. I feel like he lost a lot of
friends. I think my guy is going to look back on that and go, what was I doing? Right? And by the way, any friend that didn't convince him out of that is a bad friend.
I want to know if he has any left. I want to know if he has any left. I want to know if there are any friends that he's that's texting him or calling him and saying, hey man, saw you put on pants for the first time in 18 years. You can come over tomorrow when you're back, for the first reopening doors.
He got a lot of play yesterday.
He got so much play.
He got way too much play.
A lot of stories about him. Hey, you got my back?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
Where do you stand on Keith Urban? Where do you stand on the non-Canadian halftime act? Because I've noticed, and with every time this happens, the Twitter uproar.
Yeah.
Now there's Twitter uproar for everything.
For everything.
But the Twitter uproar is significant.
I felt like it was a fairly good show.
Are you cool though with a non-Canadian artist?
Yeah.
At the Grey Cup.
Yeah.
Performing. You're okay with it?
Yeah, I'm okay with it. Yeah. He's a pretty big star. He's a big star. That's a good get, man.
So Keith Urban, look, I was telling you guys a little earlier. There are those artists who I know of, but I couldn't name you a song.
Right, right.
That's but Keith Urban's one of those guys him. Who I like a great deal, and I'm not unfamiliar with the ways of the country back road music. I know a little Luke Bryan. I know a little Blake Shelton. I'm just saying.
You know, all down the road?
Yeah, down the road, down the dirt road, or however they refer to it.
You know Lil Nas X?
I know Lil Nas X.
Country Artist of the Year.
Thank you, yes.
Yeah.
Did you? Oh, yeah.
No.
So
I'm not going to
know about Lil Nas X. Johnny Turtleneck's going to stump me on one of the biggest songs of the last 5 years.
More than that.
Really?
It wasn't a stump you question. It was to get in the fact that he to tie it all together. It was right. Award show weekend as well.
AMAs were hot last night, too. They were good.
We could do a whole hour on that if we had to.
But I just want to give I want to play some Keith Urban.
Yep.
Because I think a Canadian artist at the Grey Cup is always a cool thing. I'm not mad at the Keith Urban call. I thought it was pretty good. So for all you country music people, here's 30 seconds to make you smile.
All right.
Keith Urban. I like this.
Can I rescind my opinion?
You want to change your opinion on this?
It's okay.
Yeah, but I'm not far from that. Like, yeah. I don't understand any Keith Urban hate. I think the guy's fantastic.
Yeah, you know what? I think if it's a league, it's good. He was in the booth as well. He's very charismatic. Like,
he's
just an unbelievably personable guy.
Yeah.
And for him to do that, that's great. That's great. I'm not mad at it.
A couple more Canadian football notes. Again, congratulations to Winnipeg on that. What an evening. Just please don't break the rest of the Grey Cup over the next couple of days. Keep it in one piece. To Bob Young and Scott Mitchell and Orlando Steinauer and everybody with the Hamilton Tiger Cats, that is tough.
It was a nice moment between Steinauer and Mike O'Shea at the field.
Oh, yeah.
That was a nice hug.
Those two
nice
go back.
Hug,
a 15-win season and everything Bob Young has done for that organization in that city and rebuilding the stadium, essentially.
They'll be back.
I hope they're back. Yeah. They had a hell of a year. Yeah. Again, their starter goes down a quarterback. So to those guys, some really good Canadian football people, it's a tough evening thinking of you as well. Get them next year, guys. Blue Bombers yesterday ended 29-year Grey Cup drought, as we've talked about. However, it must be noted, it wasn't the only significant Canadian football drought which came to an end over the weekend. For the first time in 25 years, the Calgary Dinos reached university football supremacy on Saturday afternoon, lifting the Coupe Vanier after beating Montreal and Quebec City. Quarterback Adam Sinagra threw a couple of touchdown passes. Congratulations to Adam, head coach Wayne Harris, and everyone involved in that program that's been knocking on the door for a long, long time. They brought Vanier home this weekend, and it was a hell of an afternoon and a weekend for the Calgary Dinos. Congratulations to them as well.
Was a hell of a U Sports playoffs altogether.
Absolutely.
All right. Canada's epic run at the Davis Cup came to an end on Sunday, not before another great showing in the final from Denis Shapovalov, the Canadian, falling to world number one Rafa Nadal 6-3, 7-6 to give Spain their sixth Davis Cup title, this at home in Madrid. Despite the finals loss, both Shapo and Nadal spoke about Canada's run to the final and the bright future that awaits this Canadian group.
It was a fun atmosphere. I think it's pretty special to be playing in an occasion like this against world number one. You know, he's playing at home, and it was just a lot of fun to be on the court there. Of course, it sucks to lose, but it's just a big learning experience for me.
The Canadian team is amazing. They have they are amazing today, and they're going to be one of these teams that's going to be almost unbeatable in the next couple of years.
That was Rafa Nadal on the back end, Chapo on the start of that clip pack again. This was riveting, and it built for me throughout the week.
Yeah.
Rob Faltz came in here and hijacked the show. Quite frankly, he was very rude about it, extolling the virtues of what we're seeing. And I didn't buy that Canada were going to win it, but by the first match yesterday after Shakira performed. I was buying in. Were you buying in on Canada maybe winning this thing yesterday?
First of all, a lot of people missed Rob Falls in the parts where I was this weekend covering for him on the OHL beat. He was doing his damn thing with the Davis Cup and doing a great job. I always felt Spain was going to be the most difficult opponent. And, you know, a lot of people were talking about the easy, quote-unquote, run Canada had without having to play some of the tougher countries. I don't really buy that for a second, given how young and, you know, where these Canadian players have come from. I always felt like they were going to lose to Spain. Having said that, Felix gave it all in that first set against Roberto Bautista Agut. And then that second set between Chapo and Nadal was incredible. Like, I was at a game in Oshawa, OHL, but this was on in the background for me, watching, taking in, because I wanted to experience this. I love tennis. My first opportunity in broadcasting was hosting a web series for Tennis Canada. This sport, like basketball this year, has opened its eyes to a lot of people, right? And they've realized how cool it is to follow Canadian tennis. And Nadal said it, this team is going to be here for a long, long time. And whether it's Vasek or not, I don't know, but Felix and Dennis and even Milos will have moments still where this country are going to rely on them for tennis supremacy. And I don't see a reason why they can't be back and be competitive next year as well. They're already guaranteed a berth back in the Davis Cup final, yeah, thanks to their semifinals.
This tournament gets you back to the finals in 2020, so Canada will be there.
It was just really cool seeing the love online for a sport that, you know, beyond this year, didn't really get it, right? And it's been a really good 12 months for this country in tennis, and it was cool to kind of end the year like that as well.
It's just fun. Like, Jeannie had a moment, right? Like,
Jeannie
everyone was on Jeannie,
yep,
Bouchard,
yep,
and Milos had a moment. You know, a Wimbledon final, and he, you know, it came in drips and drabs. When it happened, it was wow.
Mm-hmm.
And the conversation on every show, and the conversation in every article, and in all the message boards was, okay, is this the beginning of something for Tennis Canada? And 2019 was just incredible in that regard. Obviously, Bianca, but Chapo had his moments. So we'll just see Vasek Pospisil will come back from a back injury.
Vasek, play the week. What a week. What a week.
I still haven't heard. Producer Jay says, why did Vasek not play yesterday in the first two matches? Was he winded? Feel it? Like, he just had played so much. All right. And I completely understand that.
Yeah.
But I was wondering that, to watch Felix Auger-Aliassime go out there. He hadn't played all week because of the ankle. And I was just wondering, like, wow, how do you keep Vasek, who seemingly is on a bit of a roll here and the adrenaline is really kicking in, how do you keep him out? But I understand if Vasek...
We remember 11 months ago, he was in a hospital bed, right?
Yep.
Having back surgery. He had his knee opened up in that doubles match with Chapo against Russia on Saturday. He had another, like, lingering leg issue that was there. Felix was fresh. Felix was ready. Felix is a top 20 player in the world. I get it. It's fine. But we cannot... Just because he didn't play yesterday, we can't ignore how much Vasek Pospisil has done for this program in general. It was his win against Israel almost a decade ago that started all of this, that got them in the world group, and they haven't left since. He will be Canadian tennis royalty forever just based on this week alone, and he deserves all the accolades, too, even though he didn't play Sunday.
What I'll take away from this, aside from the fact that Davis Cup format, this format works for me.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
God, a lot of people were questioning it, right?
It was way too convoluted. I did not... Listen, I like sports.
Yep.
And I didn't really know what was going on. And I'm not meaning that as an insult to anybody.
No, no.
But now, if you keep it within a week, and we have groups, and then there's a knockout, it's nice and easy for me to understand. It's tough on the guys.
There's talk about expanding it to 10 days, give the guys a little bit more rest. Maybe some of the bigger players come, right? Like the Federer didn't come because they were playing the week before still. So, but you're right. The format is a home run. It is great. You have groups, you have elimination, you move on. That's it.
And the other thing that stuck out to me, another thing that stuck out to me was how great the Sportsnet crew was.
Incredible.
Everyone did a phenomenal job.
Incredible.
That's a lot of hours. As much as I was banging away on Falsey earlier last week.
Killing it.
Those guys were fantastic.
Yeah.
Finally, though, Vasek Pospisil, like you said, considering where he was with the back, Roberto Bautista Agut, his dad died 3 days earlier.
3 days ago.
3 days.
Yeah.
And he came back to represent his country.
Mm-hmm.
That I really should have ended with that. That's the wildest one. But then you have Rafa Nadal. He's a world number one. He doesn't have to do anything.
No, he really doesn't.
Rafa Nadal doesn't have to do anything.
And the energy, the love, the smile, and the passion he puts into this every year. It's incredible,
it's
man.
It's just the sacrifice that you see for this Davis Cup is inspiring. And that's the one thing I'll really take away from this is what it does mean for the guys, what it does mean for everyone involved. And I think this format is a home run.
Look at his reaction.
I think it's like, this guy's won everything.
Everything.
And
he's
collapses on his back like he just won Wimbledon for the first time. It's a great point.
No.
So listen, regardless of not winning the Davis Cup, to everyone that went over there and took part, you represented Canada well, guys. Congratulations. That was fun to watch. We'll see you in 2020 at that Davis Cup.
Big up all you fans who made the trip to Madrid as well. You're making some noise.
Strong Canadian
contingent. You were a road opponent there yesterday for sure in Spain's hometown, but you could hear your voices pretty damn clearly.
And Rash Mandani and everyone doing a great job.
Yeah, of course.
All right, we're going to take a break. Some more football talk coming up. Some noise was made in week 12 of the NFL season. My backpack fell. I'm sorry.
Your backpack fell?
Is Jason Garrett going to get fired?
Woo, Jerry Jones.
Is Jerry Jones that upset?
Jerry Jones is speaking again.
That's next. Tim Sid and Faisal on Sportsnet. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to Tim and Sid. I'm Faisal, filling in for Timothy, who is gone for a couple weeks. Not 5 weeks, though, right? Is that only you? Only you get that privilege?
But if he went away for 5 weeks, there'd be nothing wrong with it.
No,
because he works very hard.
Listen, that's not what I was saying.
Nothing wrong with going away for 5 weeks. Nothing.
Having you here without him is very difficult. I miss him. It's been one day, and I miss him.
Oh, you miss him.
Week 12 in the NFL, by the way. Highlighted by the Patriots shutting down the Cowboys' top-ranked offense in a thrilling 13-9 win in Foxborough. It wasn't thrilling. Weather played a huge factor for both teams, but it was the Pats who were able to win their 18th straight regular season game at home to improve to 10-1 on the season. All that didn't stop Cowboys owner Jerry Jones from speaking to the media after the game. And guess who he blamed? Oh, yeah. The head coach.
To me, special teams is 100% coaching. It's 100% coaching. This was an important game for us to win. We all saw why we didn't win it. And that's very frustrating. We have a lot of things we wanted to show up for. The quality of our opponent was tops. Quality of, but they were certainly a team that we can beat and should be beatable. And I'm disappointed we didn't get it done.
He is pissed. Jerry Jones is pissed.
Yes. Ew, how many games does Jerry Jones have left? Or Jason Garrett have
Jerry
left?
Jones Excuse has me. A lot of games left. He's
Jerry
cutting
Jones
all the checks.
He's not going anywhere. Right.
Jerry Jones can do whatever
not
he
going
wants.
Anywhere. Yeah. Jason Garrett.
Jason Garrett. Well, let's look at the math. Okay, well, first off, that's 21 straight wins at home for the Patriots.
Of all the games.
So, I mean, let's rein it in here a little bit, right? Like, the Patriots are the Patriots are the Patriots. And Tom Brady doesn't even look like himself.
Nope.
And they don't really have any outside guy, and they haven't filled in for Gronkowski. We'll get to him in a second. But, like, losing to New England at Foxborough is not the craziest thing I've ever seen. So maybe everyone needs to just relax a little bit here. I'll say this. Earlier yesterday, in what is becoming commonplace among the pregame shows in terms of scoops and whatnot, the Jason Garrett would not mind coaching the Giants report came out.
Mm-hmm.
So no one's really sure where that's coming from, but Jason Garrett is obviously in the final year of his deal. He's been lame duck the entire time.
Always.
Which is why you never do this with anybody. You never go lame duck into a season because things are going to go haywire, and then a soap opera ensues. I'll say this. Whenever you see an owner or hear an owner that upset and blatantly blame his coaching staff, he just made Zeke the highest paid running back in the history of the game. He's paid guys on defense. Dak's still waiting.
Gonna have to pay him.
But if you pay that much money to your crew and you feel like you are ready to take the next step, and against teams below 500, you're 6-1 this year, and against teams above 500, you're 0-4, I understand where the frustration is coming from. Now, the other side of that is, and there are a lot of Cowboy fans listening to this quote-unquote frustration going, no guff. What the hell did you think you were going to get from genius Garrett? Johnny claps a lot. Way to go, guys. Way to go. Beat another team that sucks.
You know how many games?
How about them Cowboys?
Yeah, they've
bring on the Dolphins.
Zero teams under over 500.
Over 500,
they've
they have not beaten a team that has a winning record.
Yeah. I know you play when you play, and they're still first in their division, but still.
I think he finishes the year.
Has to, I think.
Too. I think Garrett finishes the year. They win the division. He loses in the wild card round because they're not as strong as people think they are. And then Jason Garrett is sent packing, and Mike Tomlin becomes the next head coach of the Dallas Cowboys.
Wow.
Yeah, I saw.
Whoa.
The Steelers don't have a quarterback.
Wow.
They're in the final wild card of the AFC right
now.
Wow.
That took a turn.
I said it. Bond villain, give me a turtleneck, Jack.
Should I get you one?
No, don't. How many more games does Jason Garrett have left?
I also think he finishes the season. Yeah. I think it's way too late in the season to do something drastic at this point.
There's no more useless firing than an NFL coach midseason.
Correct.
It's ridiculously useless. There's no point.
They have 5 games left. They're still leading their division. See it out. Start again.
Yeah.
Coaching-wise, at least. You still have 2 pretty good people to build around 3 with Amari Cooper on offense. Figure it out from there.
So
Tomlin, wow.
Let's go to the Patriots side of this. Patriots are 10-1.
Yeah.
I've never heard more conversation about a 10-1 team than I have around this one. Because Tom Brady popped up on the injury list this week with the elbow, and then he popped off. And he hasn't really looked himself over the last couple of weeks.
Popped off.
He did. Okay. You know what I'm saying.
I do.
He's on the list and he's off the list.
Oh, okay, got it.
So, and everyone's saying, well, there's no there's no outside threat. Antonio Brown was supposed to work out. Mohamed Sanu didn't play yesterday. Julian Edelman can only do so much.
Right.
And Rob Gronkowski obviously walked away from the game. Now, Rob Gronkowski has been making the media rounds a little bit. There is no greater appearance, in my opinion, than what happened on the pregame show on Fox yesterday with Kurt Menefee and the guys. Rob Gronkowski is blatantly interrogated on whether or not he would come back at some point and play in New England. And he just kind of tap danced around. Pay attention to how vicious Kurt Menefee is on the follow. The first question is polite. The second question straight up interrogation. Listen to this.
If Brady picks up the phone and says, Gronk, brother, I need you just down the stretch and for the playoffs, what are you saying?
You know, I would tell him I love the guy, which I do. He set an example for me throughout my whole career. And there's many life lessons that not just Tom, but the whole organization has taught me to bring to the next level. The way that Tom just prepares, the way that how...
Are you going back?
No. I'm just saying, no, I'm not. But I'm saying I appreciate everything he's done.
Okay.
And how he has helped me out to where I am now. But no, I'm not going back. I was going around.
As soon as you put that turtleneck on, you're done.
Exactly.
Let me tell you.
Exactly.
Wait a minute.
Howie Long.
How are we turning this back to turtleneck slander?
He brings, it comes full circle here on Tim and Sid. Once you go turtleneck, you are done. The Sportsnet Twitter account, ironically enough, in the middle of this discussion that went the way of turtleneck, has now compared Rob Gronkowski's turtleneck
What is so funny behind
the question
here?
At Sportsnet, who wore it better? Shortest poll ever, it wasn't Faisal. Rob Gronkowski wins this poll.
Look at this guy. Wait a minute.
But Gronk also has a really... He looks like...
I'm getting gray. It's getting bad.
You're going gray?
Yeah.
Not just your takes, like you as a person. Okay. You're going gray. Not just your general sports opinions.
Feels personal. Wow.
That's the play here. Mention your hair and you go tight. That's the move here, Faisal. Don't you know that by now?
I should have known.
That's the move. All right, so go to at Sportsnet and
vote for me.
And don't vote for Faisal.
Thank you.
Biggest other takeaway from Week 12. We got about 40 seconds. It's your balls in your court. What do you want to do with it?
Best 2 teams in the NFC are both in the West, Niners and Seahawks, I think.
Whoa.
Yep.
Saints aren't in there?
Nope.
Really?
Nope. Michael Thomas is gangster, though. Michael Thomas is gangster.
The Saints are going to wreck anyone from this point on. I got the Saints as the best team in the NFC.
Carolina, eh? Yeah, tough.
Saints can...
Tough opponent there.
I'm just saying.
Atlanta, tough.
McCaffrey.
Tough. Tough, those Falcons.
The Saints are going to have teams coming in there, and they got to deal with Breeze. They got to deal with Michael Thomas. Anyway.
He's so good. Anyways,
Dwayne Haskins not taking victory formation for Washington after his first win because he was taking selfies in the crowd.
Oof.
Unacceptable. You can only take selfies after a game while the game's going on if you get more than 160 yards passing in a game.
Smile
guy got less than what's like. No,
smile?
No. Don't do that. Don't do that. Although I like the analogy. Coming up next, Jeremy Roenick will join us. We'll talk suspensions over the weekends from the National Hockey League, the latest from Leafland, the Habs struggles. We got some hockey talk next. JR will not hold back, that I guarantee you. Tim Sid and Faisal on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Time for Tim and Sid. Time for Tim and Sid. Time for Tim and Sid.
Oh, yeah. It's time for real sports talk with Tim McCallum and Sid Sexero.
Thank you very much, Sheepdog. Sid Sexero back here with Faisal Kamizas, filling in for the vacationing Tim McCallum. Hello, hello.
What up?
We're
sorry.
The hello, hello wasn't enough. You need to throw in a.
I wanted to say
what it because they. I didn't welcome them back good enough. I guess
a two-person show. So.
Can't wait for Arash to get here tomorrow.
Yeah,
we're
me,
with you for another 30 minutes on Sportsnet. He'll be jet lagged to hell. He won't want to
see
me.
I know he's not. He's not going to want to see. Call me if he's tired, guys. It's
sorry,
okay.
Arash.
Call me if he's tired.
2 days of me, Arash. Welcome back. Full hour coming up on Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Faisal, before we get to the hockey, Faisal walked in today with a really arrogant turtleneck and jacket combo. It is quite frankly, some people might find it fashionable. Others arrogant. I mean, I know what side of that I fall on. We've also been comparing. Faisal's outfit.
Yo, hold on. Where are you going?
What are you going down? No, don't worry about it. You're behind a desk. How far down do you think you're going to go? What's wrong?
I don't know. Wait a minute.
No, don't show that.
I don't know what happened here.
No, it's like Elvis in the 50s. I'll show below the waist. No. So we've been ripping Faisal incessantly on his turtleneck since the show started.
That works.
Also, comparing him to Rob Gronkowski's turtleneck that he was rocking on Fox yesterday. Tim and Sid, you guys have been chiming in. What have the good people been saying?
Yeah, Tate Bronson tweets in, third man in. Guess it's a Jim Carrey reference.
A Jim Carrey, that's from Dumb and Dumber. It's from the dream sequence scene in Dumb and Dumber. You want to hit play on that at all?
I just
there you go. Yeah,
okay.
the one of the great turtleneck jacket combos of all time.
Dumb and Dumber or Liar Liar? Which one's better? Which better Jim Carrey movie?
Oh my God, it's not even close.
I'm just asking.
Liar Liar was not a good movie.
Yeah, you're right.
And I'm not lying when I say
I just know that because I saw it last week at our barbershop. It was just on. And so it just
the barber you and I go to somewhere in Southern Ontario, and I won't reveal Liar Liar just
play? Yeah.
I'm not going back.
Yes, you are.
Terrible.
All right. Not the only tweet. Another one coming in. Ron Burgundy. Faisal looks like a young Ron Burgundy with that turtleneck.
Classic turtleneck look that I forgot about.
I will tell you something. And you know what? Maybe I'll try to recreate it before the show's done. I have that exact blazer upstairs.
A light blue
light
blazer?
Light blue blazer upstairs at my desk. Maybe I'll.
All right. If someone, wants to go upstairs
Burgundy
and grab
style.
It, that's fine. What else you got?
Just to be clear, there are two upstairs. One is Danielle's. One is mine. Please, if you do go upstairs and get it, don't bring Danielle's.
Please grab Danielle's.
Okay.
I would love to see that.
That's all I got.
Oh, that's all you got?
That's all
okay.
I got.
All right, we got a lot
basketball?
Going on here. Yeah, basketball.
Sixers back in Toronto for the first time since the shot 6.5 months ago. You can see tonight's game on Sportsnet 1 starting at 7 Eastern time. Michael Grange will join us from Scotiabank Arena later this hour. Should be a good game.
We begin with hockey in the lineup brought to you by Swiss Chalet. Taste it once, love it forever. Interesting night in the NHL this evening. 8 games total in the National Hockey League. 3 Canadian teams in action. Red Hot Senators, that's right. The Red Hot Senators look for their 8th win in their last 10 games where they visit the Blue Jackets. The Canucks go for their 3rd straight win as they continue their East Coast trip in Philadelphia. Viewers in the lower mainland can see it on Sportsnet Pacific at 4 local, 7 Eastern. And viewers in the Calgary region can see the Flames and Penguins at 5 Mountain Time, 7 Eastern on Sportsnet West. After getting back into the win column Saturday against the Flyers, the Flames will get a boost tonight. TJ Brody will return for the first time since collapsing at practice back on November the 14th.
I think, after everything, it sort of gives you a different outlook. And one thing I noticed is, you got to try and enjoy the game more. You know, it's a game. It's supposed to be fun. And, playing professionally, it's easy to treat it more as a job. And, I think getting back to having fun is key.
First off, for TJ Brody.
Right.
It is fantastic to see him back. The eyewitness accounts on that are pretty horrific, and it is phenomenal to see him back there less than 2 weeks after the fact. So that alone has me rooting for the Flames.
Yeah.
What are you? I'll start with you though, Faze. What are you watching tonight among the NHL schedule featuring the Canadian team?
Well, this game was the most intriguing for me, only because you know the Flames coming out of a terrible slump themselves, winning a game on the weekend, snapping a big losing streak. Pittsburgh though getting some reinforcement as well. Chris Letang activated off the IR.
Correct.
He's been out for a couple weeks. It's always fun when Pittsburgh's playing, when Calgary's playing, Evgeny Malkin's on fire. It's a pretty good game. Canucks play too. I just enjoy watching them because you never know what Elias Pettersson will do. So those are my two hockey games of choice tonight.
The Flames are intriguing for me for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
The Canucks the other day against Washington. It hasn't been a good month for the Vancouver Canucks, right?
Like, no.
This is a young team, and they're still trying to figure out how to keep that intensity of October continuing into November. And for most of November, we've seen Vancouver struggle. But Saturday afternoon, they had to bust their ass against statistically the best team in the Eastern Conference in Washington. And there were moments in that game where it could have easily slipped through their fingers. I mean, JT Miller has to go back and disrupt the TJ Oshie overtime chance. But this was one of several opportunities in that game where the Canucks blatantly had to work harder than the other team. And I haven't always seen Vancouver rise to that challenge. The fact that they did, I thought was, as the kids say, hella encouraging.
Who says that?
I don't know.
Yo, listen, who says that?
I heard it once, and I'm going with it.
If you're
going
to clown me for dressing
I'm just saying,
be saying stuff like that,
that
man.
That is a 2 points that I did not think the Canucks were going to get.
Yeah.
The Flyers, if they get close, no one's lost more shootouts than the Flyers this season. I'd love to see the Canucks leave that game on Saturday against Washington and just go against a team that isn't as sexy and grab another 2 points, because if you're Travis Green, that's the kind of stuff you want to see. That's the level of consistency that you want. So hopefully that can happen tonight for the Vancouver Canucks. So I'm really interested in Vancouver. Obviously, hopefully TJ Brody has a good night, but I'm really interested in Vancouver.
I also just quickly want to big up the Ottawa Senators. Nobody thought they would do this and maybe win that many games, period, all seasons. You know?
Shout out Vancouver. Shout out Ottawa. I'm still in Vancouver.
I was there this weekend too, and my little nephews are big Sens fans, and like we sat on a Friday night and watched that game. And said, like, generally, like, we'll go out for dinner or whatever. They wanted to sit and watch.
At what point of the season do the Sens still have to do this, and you believe them? Because
that's a good question.
I don't believe Craig Anderson and Anders Nielsen are going to play that well? Probably not. Do I believe that young blue line for the most part? I know it's not all young. But the core of it is, the important part of it is pretty young. Can they keep this consistency as they grow? Can Pajot continue to play this way in November?
Anthony Duclair scoring every game.
I have to see them do this into January. Like, I don't want to be that guy, but the expectations were so low. I'm just not going to jump on the bandwagon this quickly.
No.
I'm just not going to do that.
I'm just acknowledging their recent play, and they deserve credit because a lot of people had them as sitting at the bottom of the league, and they've risen a little bit above that right now. They beat this team, the Montreal Canadiens, suddenly slumping Habs on the ice, at least after a short delay in Brossard. Players were originally called off the ice by assistant coach Kirk Muller, sent back to the dressing room. The team said they were simply explaining the drills that would be run at practice. Montreal, of course, blew a 4-0 lead Saturday to the Rangers, losing 6-5. They're winless in four since losing Jonathan Drouin and Paul Byron to injury. Oh, they host the Bruins tomorrow night. All right, in Toronto, Sheldon Keefe held his first practice at home after his 2-0 start to his Leaf career. Most of the talk at practice surrounded an injured player, Mitch Marner, and the former coach, Mike Babcock. Sid, what was your biggest takeaway from the weekend in the NHL?
Look, I'm not going to say the Leafs here. Because as far as I'm concerned, with all due respect, that game Saturday against Colorado, I've seen that story before. Three words, Frederick Anderson. Maybe not three words, but you know what I'm trying to say. It was one of those Frederick Anderson games, and he had to really step up and play well. And they got some goals for him, obviously. But I thought Anderson was fantastic.
Yep.
And we'll see. You know, just stop leaning on Anderson like that, and I will go all in on the Leafs. Just protect him more.
They haven't gotten that though from him this season.
No, they haven't. No, but I'm talking about the team as well.
Yeah.
Like they played far better defense in Arizona on that Thursday night than they did Saturday in Colorado. So I'm not going to say the Leafs. What the hell happened to Montreal Saturday night?
Man, Man.
4-0 at home. Look, I think it's happened 5 times this year in the NHL. A team's blown a 4-0 lead. So this is not the Habs. This isn't completely rare this
season. They're one of the teams that turned it around, I think.
And that's a whole other discussion as to why it's becoming so common for 4-0 leads to be the worst lead in hockey. I'm not quite sure. Maybe it's because the freewheeling that's going on, I guess.
Score effects.
But listen, I don't want to jump on Claude Julien completely, but his timeout in this hockey game took place when they were down late in the hockey game. At no point when they were blowing the 4-0 lead did Claude Julien call a timeout. Why? How do you have the timeout? You are allowed under NHL bylaws to call a timeout. I found that really weird. And quite frankly, Carey Price with a 4-0 lead should be able to take care of it.
What's weirder about all of this, and maybe the streak in general, is that they're coming off that big win against Washington just 10 days ago. Right. They win 5-2. Yes, they lose a couple of key players. They're playing Carey Price in back-to-backs, once against the Sens. They've lost to the Rangers, the Devils, the Blue Jackets, and the Sens. 4 of the 5 worst teams in the East, points-wise, in this 10-day span. That's no good. That's just no good.
With Drouin out of the lineup, with Max Domi struggling... 4 in a row now, the way they lost on Saturday night. My gut tells me not to panic if you're a Habs fan. Because I like...
Right.
Listen, if Shea Weber's on the ice and Carey Price is on the ice, I like your chances to stay afloat and keep your head above water and then find your way. And there's always a trade that can happen here with Mark Bergevin. There's a lot of names out there. You never know what he can do. If you're a Habs fan after seeing that Saturday, do you panic?
They're panicking anyways. Yeah, I mean, I would tell them not to. I would tell them not to. It's a 10-day spend to hockey.
It's Montreal. There is panic
right.
Regardless.
I wouldn't. This team has shown something this year and with Drouin back in the lineup. I know it's going to be a while, but they've still got something. I know we were just talking about Max Domi and his suddenly can't score. He popped a couple on the weekend. They need to get the win, though, and Carey Price is still Carey Price. So don't panic. Don't panic yet, I'll say. Don't panic yet.
We got 2 Habs supporters in the room. You guys panicking? Yes or no? We got a maybe.
Not yet.
From Sebastian. Okay, we'll revisit that definitely as the week progresses here. Jeremy Roenick from NBC Sports Network has been kind enough to join us. There is a lot of interesting things happening in the NHL right now. JR, welcome back to the show. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Always love being on with you guys. How we're doing?
Very good, very good. There's some odd stories out there. So let's walk down a few of them. The Mike Babcock story is not dying in Toronto, JR. And the latest is the story involving Mitch Marner in his rookie season being asked who works the least on the team, and Babcock telling the team who Mitch Marner selected. This just surfaced in the last 24 hours or so. A, what do you make of that story coming out? And B, why don't you think this Babcock story is dying?
Well, assuming that that's true, and I find it believable.
Well, sorry, JR, just to bring up to speed. Every party involved has confirmed it.
Okay, well, yeah. I think it's utter... unfortunately, to tell you the truth, it is... It's something that does not need to happen in any sport. No way should a coach turn any of his players against another player or use another player for any kind of firepower to get at...
We're gonna try and reestablish the phone line's a little shaky, guys. You can just try it again in the back. My apologies for the technical difficulties.
I think the word he used when he got cut off was
It was the word I wanted more than every other word.
He said Bush League.
Did he say Bush League?
He said Bush League.
Because I missed it. He said Bush League?
I heard League, and I can tell you, I assume what the other word is. Yeah.
Okay, so we'll try and reestablish with Jeremy Roenick.
But that's what I mean. There isn't like a gray area here, right? There's no split here from anybody as to, oh, well, he was just coaching, he's motivating.
Right.
No, everybody thinks this was just horrible and terrible, and I don't... The other report that...
I never want to play the other side. I'm not the guy who plays the other side.
Right.
He did lead the team in scoring in consecutive years.
No.
How much did it damage him?
I'm not saying it damaged him there, but the second article that came out last night suggested that Marner was made to tears after this. And so I'm trying to figure out why, right? Trying to figure out why.
All right, let's try and reestablish here with JR. JR, forgive us for the technical difficulties.
Yeah.
Can you hear us?
Yeah, sorry. I think that was my fault. So hopefully I'm in a better area where you can hear me better.
No problem. I just want to confirm off the front because you cut off when you said that. Did you say that it was Bush League, the story?
Bush League, absolutely. Okay. No, I think doing that is Bush League. Correct. I think it's a Bush League. I think it's a Bush League move. I think it's an amateur move. I think it's an arrogant move to use a rookie to help your position to motivate other players or to blackmail other players or to have something on other players, to have a young kid who is eager to play in the National Hockey League, who has all the desire in the world to play in Toronto, and you're pretty much blackmailing him to use him for dirt against the players that he's got to go out and play hard for, from the players that have to play hard for him. That is that's one of the worst things I think I've ever heard. And you know, as good of a coach as Babcock might have been and has been with championships and his record and all that stuff, that stoops way too low as for any coach in any league in any level to do something like that to a player. I feel awful for Mitch Marner because I know he's a heart and soul type guy. He's a team player. Obviously, he's one of the best players in the game. And to put him in that kind of situation, that's an awful way to start off a career.
JR, I think we're all of the same opinion that Mike Babcock believes his career as a head coach in this league isn't done. A story like this, however, how much damage could it do to those prospects?
Well, it could have a lot of damage, and I think it should have a lot of damage. I think those things should go, those unspeakable things should have serious consequences, whether that's being fined or whether that's being, you know, I think a deterrent to get another job. And, you know, is he the type of coach that can coach in the game today with the way the players are today? With the way, and I could still consider him an old school coach, where he wears his heart in the sleeve in terms of his verbal confrontations, his ability to intimidate young players. I'll say this: what I hear from people that I know about him. Now, listen, anything I say, I'm not speaking on my interpretation of Mike Babcock and meeting him or his record. I go by what other people of very high value to me have told me. You know, maybe his ego is bigger than the team, bigger than the game, and it comes across to other players like that, that might be intimidated, especially young guys. Is he the type of player that can play in the game now, that can coach in the game? That's one question that's going to have to be answered, because you see all these young coaches coming in that are doing a great job, you know, that are changing kind of the way and the mentality that they're treating these young kids.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, Jared, just on that point right now. Like, the game is changing. The front offices are getting younger. The players are getting younger. The motivational tactics that maybe worked a couple decades ago seemingly have changed. Do you think for guys like Babcock to still stick around in this league, they need to evolve as well?
There's no question about it. And some of the best coaches in the game have been able to morph themselves and transcend themselves a little bit. I think, you know, if you look at how Joel Quenneville coaches, I think Joel Quenneville used to be a guy that used to intimidate the heck out of players and people. And his, you know, one of the second all-time leading winner as coaches go in the history of the game. But I think he's finding a way to maybe have a different way of getting across to players, a different message, and that's important. And I even think, even going further, John Tortorella has been able to, I think, to tone it down a little bit. He's been known as probably one of the hardest old school in your face coaches that we have in the game today. But I see him kind of toning down a little bit, especially over the last couple of years with, you know, with the way that the team's changed and intermingled in terms of losing guys and gaining guys.
JR, one last question on this topic, then we'll move on to some of the suspensions from the weekend. What do you believe of the opinion that some are holding when it comes to this story, saying it's gutless after the fact to be leaking stuff like this? If you had a problem with them, deal with it in the moment. Deal with it 3 years ago. Whoever leaked it, I have no idea who leaked it. But it's gutless now that he's gone. And it's not uncommon in sports nowadays, but it's gutless now he's gone to be floating something like this. How would you respond to that?
I think there's some validity to that. I would be one that would come right out and be, this is totally unacceptable. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of fear in players today of coaches that have such power and such influence to, you know, to blackball them if something happens. I can understand that, but this is something that's way too, I think, off the radar to not bring it to somebody's attention and make sure that, you know, what is happening at our upper echelon of our team is dealt with and is not putting a wedge between our team, because that for sure could have, you know, would have put a wedge, and it is going to put a wedge if it happens again. And I don't think you should wait. I think it is kind of, you know, again, I'll call it, you know, you call it gutless maybe, but I can understand why, but it needed to be come out right away.
Let's move on to some controversy on the ice. Robert Bertuzzo suspended 4 games for a couple cross checks on Victor Arvidsson. The 4-game suspension, the ban, are you okay with that? Your thoughts on that?
Well, I think the NHL is trying to do a lot of things right now to try to send a message. You saw the message of the spitting with 3 games last week. Now Bertuzzo with that cross check from behind. These are the most dangerous things, I think, injury-prone penalties that you can have. When the guys aren't expecting it, they are near objects that can seriously do damage. And, you know, I've always been one. Listen, if you're going to take a penalty, be looking at them. You know, be looking face-to-face, be looking at the chest. This stuff from behind, I know it's a fast game. I know it's a, you know, spur-of-the-moment decision, but... Listen, anytime you see somebody's name or see somebody's number, there has to be some accountability. I'm a big Robert Bertuzzo fan. I hate to talk down on him because he's a very honest player, but he was not honest in this situation. He could have done serious damage to Arvidsson. And again, what's even worse, though, is the Kerfoot one with the cross check from behind and a forecheck at the goal line or anywhere near the boards. I hate this so much. I think a couple games for Kerfoot is totally not enough. I would have given them 10, 15 games, because this is the injury, this is the penalty that someone is going to get paralyzed again, or even worse, because people can die from neck injuries and head injuries that can be that you can get from these little pushes from behind 2 or 3 feet from the boards. It happened last year in the playoffs. You had Warren Fogle, who cross-checked TJ Oshie 3 feet from the boards. He broke his collarbone in 3 different places, was out for the rest of the playoffs, and he's lucky it was only his shoulder, his collarbone. I hate these. And you said gutless. If there's a gutless penalty in all of hockey, it is the cross checks 2 or 3 feet away from the boards, especially on a forecheck. That is the biggest lack of respect for a defenseman that already has a tough job of going back to get a puck. And then you do that. Kerfoot should get 15, 20 games, in my opinion, for that one.
JR, strong stuff. I don't disagree with that. Thank you for powering through the beeping going on behind you the entire time. We love you for it.
She's crazy.
Let's do this again, man. Thank you.
All right, guys. Thanks again. Sorry for the place I'm at.
Oh, no. Are you kidding? That was fantastic. Thank you very much. Jeremy Ronan. I'll take all the beeping in the world if you're going to come hot like that. We're going to take a break. Faisal and I will digest what JR said. Go over the suspensions again one more time. Lots to talk about. Tim Sid and Faisal on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to Tim and Sid. I'm Faisal filling in for Tim. Some strong stuff from Jeremy Roenick before we cut to break.
Good stuff.
Really, really good stuff. So what I agree with was the length of suspension should have been longer in both situations. I think Bertuzzo should have got the longer of the two. The first cross-check in itself, I think, warranted a bigger suspension than 4 games. Throwing that second cheap one, that's a double-digit one, in my opinion.
I think if you're on your third suspension in this league, I think it's a real simple rule. Minimum 5 games. I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's spit. I don't care if you lick a guy's face. I don't care if you cross-check him into the end boards. If you are being suspended for a third time in this league, you want to get real?
Wasn't even
minimum
in-person.
5 games.
Wasn't even an in-person hearing.
Nope.
Couldn't do it.
The guy's gone. Victor Arvidsson's gone 4 to 6 weeks.
By the way, Brad Marchand had a similar hit this weekend. A similar week of this weekend.
True.
No penalty, no nothing. So, again, inconsistency as always.
The Kerfoot hit, and again, Alex Kerfoot of the Leafs gone 2 games for those of you who've missed it. that guy was a teammate of his like 8 months ago. That scares the hell out of me, man. Like, there's an element. I understand you need to make a play, but respect is respect is respect.
Yep.
You know that guy. You know his family, possibly. Like, ease up and try not to put his career in jeopardy. I found that shot. The Kerfoot hit was absolutely shocking. Yeah. Thanks to JR again for showing up. Time to say goodbye to those of you watching on Sportsnet. Up next, this is what happens. Watch this. Seamless transition. Up next, Hockey Central with Carolyn Cameron and Colby Armstrong. Then at 7 Eastern, we've got the Flames and Canucks. 7 Eastern on Sportsnet 1. Raptors host the Sixers and Ontario and East, by the way. Meanwhile, Tim and Sid with Faisal continues on Sportsnet 360. You're not done. Another half an hour. And Sportsnet 590, The Fan, here in Toronto.
All right, as mentioned, big game at Scotiabank Arena tonight. Should be a great atmosphere. The Sixers visit for the first time since a Game 7 in last year's Eastern Conference semifinals. The series came down to that deciding game. Well, we all know how it ended with the shot.
It's Game 7.
Much talk of 2001 and how legacies will be defined. Kawhi Leonard with the steal.
Finish off the first half on an 11-3 run.
Fred with the steal.
Rejection by Embiid. 2 points for Ibaka.
The fans going crazy.
Let's go to the fourth. 3-point game.
The tension, you can feel it in the building. Short, tapped out. Controlled by Harris. Butler driving. Ties it up. 4.2 to go. Kawhi up top. Looks at the clock, turns the corner for the win. You got it! Kawhi Leonard! With the game winner! 18 years later, the Raptors get the shot to go. The Toronto Raptors are headed to the Eastern Conference Finals.
I was fine with all of that until I saw the "he stays" sign, and I'm like, man, I wish he stayed. There are moments where I'm like, I'm not mad he left. I'm fine.
I'm still
but there are
left.
Moments when I'm like, good God, I wish you stayed. Good God, I wish you stayed with how this team is doing. Maybe they'd be higher in power rankings right now. Plenty has changed since last summer, as you
absolutely.
Know.
Absolutely.
If these two teams were to meet again in a best of seven series, again, both teams have gone through pretty radical transformations of their roster, losing some big pieces. Who wins?
So if the Raptors... Let's say, obviously, healthy.
Healthy.
If a healthy Raptors team right now.
Lowry, Ibaka back. Matt Thomas back.
Matt Thomas shooting 60% from there. Take on a healthy Sixers team right now, a full squad Sixers team. Who wins? I don't think it's the Sixers. I think the Sixers are a team built to be the nearly team of this Eastern Conference. They're always going to look good. They're always going to look appealing because Joel Embiid has that in him. But there's something about the Raptors having done it. Sixers didn't do it.
This is a very, you know, crawl before you ball league. You got to go through some heartbreak. Joel Embiid, that team faced it last year, but it's not usually. We've sat here and talked about how long the Raptors have gone through that heartbreak before finally breaking through a season to go. I don't know who would win. I really don't. They're both pretty good teams.
You don't think this Raptors team healthy will beat this Sixers team in a best of seven series?
I'd lean more towards them beating them, yes. I do also think like this Philly team is still trying to figure it out, right? They don't have a guy who can dribble. They don't have a guy who dribbles for this team.
The figuring it out. Okay. Joel Embiid believes he's the best player in the league. Ben Simmons is the best player in league history that can't shoot a three.
The guy they signed for all the money to hit a 3-2 can't hit one. Tobias
Jimmy
Harris.
Butler was expendable, apparently. Al Horford, bring in Al Horford. You really, like, give me a break. This team, this is the most egotistical group in the Eastern Conference. Hands down, they believe they invented basketball more than anyone else. they've been trusting this process for a while now. The Celtics without Kyrie look like a different team. The Raptors without Kawhi, all of them have been there and done that. Kawhi's a big piece, but they've been there and done that. Milwaukee, I mean, Giannis is putting up ridiculous numbers again. So you have to respect Milwaukee. But the ego with which this Philly team walks around with is nauseating, man. It is absolutely not. I mean, Joel Embiid got, quote-unquote, sick for the majority of that series last year. And there are nights he felt like, and he's doing shimmies and he's playing up to the crowd. And other nights, he's a complete no-show. Does that seem like a champion to you? Does Ben Simmons seem like a champion? You got to hit a three. If Ben Simmons really knew how to hit a three-pointer, he'd be the most lethal guy in
the
league.
He really would.
Because then
he would.
You have to go out there and meet him, and he puts it on the deck, and then he gets 40 a night. Like, this, there are so many flaws with they're talented. Don't get me wrong. There's real talent in the core, but don't tell me they play better basketball than the Raptors, even without Kawhi.
I wanted to ask you, then why are they so highly ranked in the power rankings above the Raptors? But we'll save that discussion for a little later, because Michael Grange joining us right now from Scotiabank Arena. Michael, how you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Do I have to say award-winning Michael Grange every time? Do I have to say it? I don't know.
Yeah, well, I'll say it because Mike is a humble yeah, man. But again, honored this past week of the Canadian Sports Awards. How was the afternoon, Mike? I'll never be honored with anything. Fill me in. I'm going to live vicariously through you.
Well, it was really nice. And the best part is my family was there, my older brother, my parents. And I got to say really nice things about my wife, with my wife there and a whole bunch of people around. I'm good.
There you go. It's a good week.
I was there too. But yeah.
Good week. Scored a lot of points.
I recommend it. Win an award and be able to say nice things with your wife there.
All right. I'll never enjoy that experience, but maybe one day I'll get lucky. Mike, May 12th of this year. It seems like just yesterday, doesn't it?
It really does. I mean, but it, in a way, it also seems like a decade ago because, you know, once the NBA season starts, just things start rolling and it just leads to this. You know, this kind of downhill snowball building towards May of this coming year. But when you stop and think about it and what happened on that day and that shot and all of that, those kinds of things, it really was a pivotal moment for two franchises, really.
So what do you make of the other one? Because we'll talk about the Raptors in a little bit. But what do you make of the 76ers? They lose Jimmy Butler. They bring in Al Horford. They're still trying to figure it out about a middle-of-the-league team on offense right now. Still pretty good defensively. But it feels like, Michael, just given the pieces and names that are there, they should be a little more dominant, no?
Yeah, I think there is going to be a filling-out process. And there's always, you know, going to be... how they had their entire lineup together and all that kind of thing. I do think they're going to be an elite team. I don't think they're going to be as good a team as they were in the playoffs last year. Mm-hmm. I think losing Jimmy Butler is massive. He was the second best player in that series. And J.J. Redick is completely underrated in terms of how he can impact elite teams. So that doesn't mean that the Sixers are still not a very, very good team. They're huge. They have a chance and I think will eventually emerge as the best defensive team in the NBA, or at least as long as Joel Embiid is healthy and willing. So they're a team to be reckoned with. But, you know, just listening to what you guys are saying off the top, they still have a lot to prove. And, you know, that starts with being able to get out of the second round and be able to beat a team like the Raptors.
It's a big year for Brett Brown, isn't it, Mike?
It is, and you know, you want to see him succeed because he's been there a long time. He certainly suffered through some, you know, you wouldn't even call it growing pains. It was versions of torture for the first 2-3 years when the process was still unfolding at a snail's pace. But and he's one of those guys who's been around the league forever. So for him to have a chance to take it all the way and get a legitimate chance, another legitimate chance to win an NBA title. You know, you'd like to see a guy be able to tell that kind of story, but the reality is, very much like Dwayne Casey here in Toronto, if he doesn't get it done, or if it's the perception develops as this season goes along that he can't get it done, he's not going to get that chance. So this is it for him. There is an urgency. There should be an urgency, because I'm sure if you surveyed any of the players, including the coaching staff, they believe they should have won the NBA title last year. And, you know, you only get so many cracks at that.
Michael, what do we learn a game one sixth of the season in? Yes, there are two teams, of course, that met in the second round last year. Yes, there was an amazing moment that cemented one team, for, like you said, changed two teams forever. But what can we learn about a game on November 25th, 2019, between two teams right now?
Well, normally I would say I'd be willing to learn a lot because these two teams have changed significantly since the two teams that were on the floor in Game 7. You know, we talked about the changes the Sixers have made. We don't need to talk about the changes the Raptors have made. I mean, we've talked about that a lot. But unfortunately, you know, at this stage of the season, the team the Raptors are rolling out there bears no resemblance, I would hope, to the team that they would be rolling with heading into the playoffs. I mean, there's just so many guys out with injury. I just saw Matt Thomas in the x-ray room behind here at Scotiabank Arena and with a little cast on his non-shooting hand, on his finger of his non-shooting hand. So just add him to the list. So normally, Faisal, and you know, I think there would be some good takeaways to draw on from a matchup like this if two teams were at least somewhere close to peak health. But the Raptors are far away from that. So, you know, I think the result tonight is going to be, I'd put it this way, if the Raptors can beat the Sixers in the condition they're in, the Raptors are in, you know, it might say a lot about the Sixers, but I don't know if it tells you all that much about the Raptors.
Mike, usually on social media, there's one or two topics per day that wear me out. Today there are two topics currently wearing me out. One is Marner and Babcock. Two is the ESPN NBA power rankings. And all I have seen today is how the Raptors are not top 10 on ESPN's power rankings. For the record, they are 11th, but they are not top 10. There is an anger growing around this, the likes of which I haven't seen in a very long time. How much stock do you put in the power rankings personally, Mike? And should we just walk away from this topic altogether?
Well, I think power rankings at this time of an NBA season, what else are you going to talk about? I mean, the season, you know, the playoffs don't start for another 4 or 5 months. So you might as well, you can't just ignore the regular season. And I think power rankings are interesting. I do think it's really interesting or telling or confusing why the Raptors aren't in the top 10 of the NBA. I mean, they have a top 10 record. They have a top 10 and, you know, top 5 in multiple important statistical categories. They are a defending champion. And I think if I were to put it, try to explain why people would be upset, I mean, I'm not upset. I'm just find it confusing. It'd be, you know, what does a team like this have to do to get the attention it deserves coming off an NBA championship? So I guess the good news, Sid, is the Canadian basketball alienation and spirit of remains strong and probably isn't going anywhere for a long, long time. And so we'll always be able to dip our toes into that. But yeah, just a weird omission as far as I'm concerned. And listen, I've been in the U.S. during the playoffs, and I remember, I don't know if it was ESPN, but let's say it was ESPN running a poll of who were the most likely Eastern Conference finalists. The Raptors were in the second round leading their playoff series, and they weren't one of the team listed. I mean, just these little oversights that, you know, they must mean something because they keep happening.
We just saw Pascal Siakam trying to photobomb you, walked back into the shot, clearly loose ahead of this game. more of a general question, I guess, seeing that we just saw him. What do you make, again, of his continued improvement, continued evolution? We heard Joel Embiid talk about him today as still a guy trying to find his way in the league and continuing to improve. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, it's not like he's hit his ceiling, but I think what I've seen this year is how high that ceiling might really be. And it's even more impressive than it was just a few months ago when he was putting up big numbers in the playoffs. You remember against Philadelphia, he really did struggle against the Sixers with Joel Embiid on him. They were able to cover him with Joel Embiid because they weren't worried about his three-point shot. They thought they could kind of snuff out his around-the-basket game and were largely correct. Well, he didn't sit on that, and he's come back a much better player. And I guess what I would say is, as good as we all thought Pascal Siakam was last year, how exciting his improvement was, and he got the deserved MIP award, what I've seen so far this season is even more exciting and even more unexpected, because he's kind of, to me, transitioned from a guy who's clearly going to be an all-star caliber player to one of those guys who there really isn't a ceiling. And doesn't mean he's going to be the best player in the game, doesn't mean he's going to be an MVP, but all of a sudden you can sort of see the outlines of that type of player. And we're talking a top 10, top 5 NBA player, which, you know, franchises just don't get those. You don't get them drafting him 27th overall. And it's all credit to Pascal Siakam, the progress he's made. But that's what I take away from him this season. As great as he's been, He's still got a lot to learn, but the sort of touch points of his game scream elite. And when I say elite, I mean, you know, all NBA, you know, MVP conversation type player. Hmm.
Raptors and Sixers, the first of four this season, the first since Game 7 back in the spring. Live on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590, the Fan tonight. Michael Grange of Sportsnet, terrific stuff. Enjoy the game tonight, Mike. Always appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
There is Michael Grange again from Sportsnet. And, again, I missed the photobomb initially Pascal Siena.
Do you guys have it? Do we have it?
We have the photobomb, and I'll describe it to the good people of radio. So right now, over left shoulder of Michael Grange,
he walks back
by,
to the shot.
Doubles back, gives the stare into the camera. It's subtle, yet kind of hilarious at the same time. Oh, what's this? What's this? Tim Sidden-Faisal? Yes. What's going on? And he walks away. So Pascal Siena, like you said, loose.
Very loose.
But Mike's right. A win tonight against the Sixers, this banged up. Oh!
There's
going to be some talking going on tomorrow from Raptorland.
What do you guys call it? Meaningful stat or what?
Do you want... Oh, my holy God.
What is it? Meaningful stat or what? Unnecessary number or something?
Yes, it's unnecessary stat.
Right, super
and
stat.
Unnecessary number, yes.
Super stat. Sorry, I have other things I do
yes,
here.
Yes, thank you for watching Jay and Dan. Appreciate it.
Oh, come
my God.
On. Super stat or meaningless number.
Thank you.
Can we do it?
Go ahead.
Can I start again? What do you guys call it? Superstat or meaningless number?
Got it. No, you nailed it. Just the fifth try.
Thank
Go
you.
Ahead. Superstat, meaningless number.
The Raptors haven't lost an Atlantic Division home game. November 10, 2015, 31 straight regular season wins.
Cut or uncut, Faisal bringing up his own tweet.
I'm sorry, I wanted to read it.
Number.
I didn't mean for them to bring it up.
You brought up your own tweet, and then they flashed it on national television.
Another one up here,
that's
guys.
A super stat. You got another one? I'll go ahead.
No, I'm just kidding. That's my Twitter account.
How do you do TweetDeck? How do you do that?
We'll learn one day.
I can't even do picture-in-picture without getting distracted.
I know you can.
You do TweetDeck?
Yeah, I do.
We'll talk after.
No, we won't.
What we missed. I missed Tim today.
Come on, man.
Honestly,
over the weekend, Nazem Kadri sat down with her own David Ammer to talk about the offseason trade. Naz was kind of interesting. Listen to this.
How did you hear you were traded?
Dubas called me, you know, told me it was a bit of a hard decision. It's fairly quick. It was a bit surprising. I mean, it was like a, you know, 40, 45 second conversation. I was, you know, a little bit bitter afterwards. I mean, I felt like I deserved a little bit better after 10 years. Maybe a face-to-face conversation or something.
Listen, man, you want a face-to-face? Finish a playoff series without being suspended.
Yeah.
Like, let's come on here.
We know how the world works today,
man. Give
me
a break.
Yeah.
You text guys. Yeah, it's July 1st. Everyone's all over North America and or overseas, man. You're on vacation. Give me a break. I like Nazem. I got a lot of time for Nazem Kadri.
Yeah.
But don't give me the face-to-face, man. It's 2019. Players find out before they're called. Stuff's broken all the time. It happens. Deal with it. I don't agree with that. Oh, do you want to add to that or no?
No, you said everything I wanted to say. I just didn't know how we did this here. So do I read the next one?
Don't do anything. Just keep bringing up your own tweets and the referencing them.
It's going to change to the other Blazer then.
Did you see the post-game in Arizona last week? With the Leafs and John Tavares?
Yes, I did.
So John Tavares gave a little speech in the dressing room. This was released by the Leafs. Take a listen after Sheldon Keefe's first game.
Hey, one sec. We f***ing build from here. We keep f***ing going. This is the f***ing start of something special. Let's keep f***ing push each other. We get better tomorrow. Coach.
Woo! We're starting something good here. Is that a little message being sent by John Tavares in the room as Faisal changes into a light blue jacket?
Yeah. It is a message.
Yeah.
I didn't even know he spoke like that. Didn't even know he had that many words to say.
I wouldn't release the video. I'm not going to lie.
I'm not going to lie to you either.
I think that's a moment in the room where when you're a hockey team like the Leafs, everyone's looking for stuff.
Yeah.
And I just kind of I'd keep it under wraps. So
it surprised me to see that. Public because we hadn't seen any other video other than opening night. You get the Raptors ball, and we understand why you did that. Ball still live. Pierre Engvall got the ball that day.
The basketball still thing in the Leafs room?
Coach got the puck.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
I thought Babcock took his ball and went home. No? The ball's alive and well? We talked about Keith Urban. He took to the stage at halftime of the Grey Cup yesterday. We also mentioned Shakira performed before the Davis Cup final. Is Shakira and Gerard Piquet still a thing? Are they still
a thing?
Item?
He was there. He was at the Davis
Barcelona
Cup. He had a press conference at the Davis Cup.
So, well, he's got a huge business interest in the Davis Cup.
Yes.
Okay, so that makes sense. So if you had a choice between one of the two performances, Shakira or Keith Urban?
Only these two.
You can sit there for 2 hours. That's your choice. Shakira or Keith Urban?
Yeah, it's tough.
What is it?
It's Shakira.
Seb doesn't think it's tough at all.
Seb?
What do you think, Seb? Seb looks to both of us and says, Shakira.
Like he should have a turtleneck on.
Guys, I'm not feeling the Shakira. I've heard a ton of singers, both English and Latin, who are amazing, who are way better than Shakira. Like,
well, you mentioned Gerard Piqué's business interests, right?
But Shakira's like the most overrated artist I've ever. Come on.
There's 18 people nothing, raving with
there's
her.
There's nothing to this. Shakira's one of the most overrated artists I've ever heard. I'm alone in that? Are you serious? My hips move too, man. All right?
Mine don't.
Mine do.
Yeah, yeah.
Mine do.
I slipped on the ice this weekend at one of the games, and
you were in Oshawa?
This was the Oshawa game yesterday.
You slipped on the ice.
Yeah. Actually, it was worse. I slipped off the ice. Where the Zamboni comes out, it was just a lot of water there, and I was running to go to the bench. Like, you do a pregame hit where you are, and then you run to the bench to do an interview. I slipped. I wiped out.
How do
wiped
we,
out. There's no video. There's no video.
My ass, there's no video.
No, because it wasn't.
Someone
no
in that truck has the video.
There's no. No.
To everyone at Sportsnet who's doing junior hockey this weekend in Oshawa, for the love of God, if you have video of,
second time,
of Faisal Kamiza, were you wearing? Tell me you're wearing the turtleneck this weekend. Were you wearing the turtleneck?
No.
That's double word score there. Anyone in the truck, please send the video quietly to us, and then we'll not quietly play it for everyone on national television and display it and describe it on radio.
No, I'm confident.
Are you sure?
Confident.
There's video of Chuba Hubbard. Heard of Chuba Hubbard?
A lot of video of him.
Watch continues. The Sherwood Park, Alberta native continues to lead NCAA Division 1A football in rushing. 106 yards this past weekend on the ground in Oklahoma's 20-13 win, Oklahoma State, pardon me, 20-13 win over Virginia. Are you in the Chuba for Heisman category, Faisal? Are you on the train? He has 9 straight games with over 100 yards rushing. Chuba Hubbard, there are whispers now he gets into the final three and heads to New York for the Heisman Trophy ceremony. Do you think Chuba deserves to be there?
Yeah, I like the whispers. I don't think he's going to win it. I think it's notoriously a quarterback award, and it probably will be again this year. Joe Burrow has been amazing. Like, a couple quarterbacks that could probably do that as well, but he deserves the accolade. Like, the leading rusher in the NCAA usually has more accolade than he's getting right now, and I'd like to see more down south. I know you guys have been on it for a majority of this season.
Tim started the train.
Exactly right.
And producer Jason Sands started the train. I got on late, but I'm on the train. I'm firmly on the train.
On the train as well. My guy's incredible.
Did you see what Deontay Wilder did to Luis Ortiz at the MGM Grand over the weekend? For the WBC Heavyweight Championship.
So,
what Wilder did to him?
I didn't, and I was going to watch it, but then I remember your excitement in setting this up, so I want to watch it with you for the first time. I didn't see it. I was busy, obviously, this weekend.
So, Luis Ortiz is losing the entire fight. Wilder drops him viciously in the 7th round.
Okay.
For those watching at home, we can't show, because it was a pay-per-view, we can't show you exactly knockout.
So, you can describe it.
But we can show you how this young man is 42, 0-1 in his career. Because when he walks to the ring, he looks like a transformer. We can show you the entrance.
So this and I saw on Twitter.
He has got like a diamond-encrusted mask. No wrestler I've ever seen in my life has a walk-in as cool as Deontay Wilder.
Hold on.
WBC heavyweight champion of the world. Dude, you have to take on that guy.
So that's great. I'm not focused on him anymore.
He looks like a White Walker. Like he is not what you want to take on. For the record, that's 10 straight title defenses of the WBC crown for Deontay Wilder.
Excellent.
Do you know who didn't do that? Joe Lewis and Mike Tyson. They never defended that belt 10 times. Deontay Wilder did. He's going to tell on Tyson Fury probably early next year.
One sec. Couple guys with turtlenecks and blazers walking with him. You got a problem with them wearing that too? Because I think they would fight you, sir.
Really?
I think they would fight you, sir.
Okay, finally. Where do we stand on your turtleneck? Because now you're wearing a blue.
Well, if you guys want to actually pull up the tweet, this is not my tweet.
You look so conceited.
Thank you.
You look like Ron Burgundy.
It's called concealer. Yeah, like this works, right?
Picture Ron Burgundy.
I wish I did the mustache.
At his most vulnerable in Anchorman, and that is Faisal Khamis.
That's how I feel when hosting this show with you, my friend.
Look.
Yes.
I honestly, you look good. The turtleneck works for you.
Thank you.
I think it makes
this
you look.
This is going to end poorly. So go ahead.
No. I'm going to give you a compliment.
You're not.
I'm embarrassed by your look. I think it was a huge mistake.
Do you know what compliment means?
No, let me try this again.
Okay.
Here's a compliment. I don't want to be next to you right now. I believe the show is less because of your wardrobe. You as a person are great.
Thank you.
But the show has suffered greatly because of this conceited, over-the-top turtleneck thing that I guarantee you Arashman Danny will not be rocking.
Is Donovan
tomorrow.
Hosting this week?
And Donovan's in
yeah.
too.
Yeah. All right. Have fun
We're
saying
done.
All that to him,
See
too.
See you tomorrow. Turtlenecks.